Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I'm Vlad Sedler here along with Jason Anthony, recording on Tuesday, June the 18th at about the 45% mark of the MLB season. And today we're joined by an extra special guest. He's a good friend. I think I've known him for about 20 years. I've been to his wedding, and he's a phenomenal NFBC player, one of the best out there. He is the co-host of the Sunday night RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. He is none other than Scott Gjenstad. Hey, what's going on, Scott?
Vlad, Jason, love you guys. Love listening to the podcast. Thanks for having me on. Should be fun.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you on, Scott. You'll never say it, but you're one of the best in the biz. Love listening to your pod. I'm excited to have you on our pod. I'm excited to talk some ball with you boys tonight.
Well, it's very, very nice of you to say. I appreciate it.
So, Scotty, before we get into a bunch of details, news, and notes, we got a couple of interesting, fun things to talk about. First things first, you and your feeling on, and I'm sure you've mentioned this on your podcast before, but how are you feeling about the Oakland Athletics this year? Sorry, I just have to ask. And are they still your team in your heart, or have you like truly moved on?
I'll answer this in two parts. First of all, I thought it was funny when they were like 17 and 17. Everybody's like, oh, they might be sneaky good. Like they were horrible and they have not won a game since. They're awful. They're terrible. My second point is in your outline here, you mentioned that now that I've abandoned the A's abandoned me, man. It's fully the other way around. Yeah, I'm out. As long as Fisher owns the team, I'm disinterested. If they move, I'll actively root against them. Now I'm just kind of neutral, but I like some of the players. I feel bad for the fans. I'd like to see them, win some games at home this year for a lot of the good fans they do have. But Fisher's ruined that franchise. And once they leave next year, I'm actively out and actively rooting against them.
So do you have a replacement team, Scott, or is it just baseball in general? Like, is there any team in the running?
Luckily, I really love baseball, and I obviously play fantasy, and I care a lot about that. I've always been someone that cared more about my team than fantasy. I mean, you know me well. I'm a Niners and Warriors fans above my fantasy football or basketball teams. I've always been an A's fan instead of fantasy baseball. That's probably going to flip. I like going to Dodger games, but I can't be a Dodger fan. That just doesn't work. I like watching fun young teams. I'm really enjoying the Orioles this year. So that's, as we get to the playoffs, it's probably who I root for. Jeff Erickson, my co-host on Sunday night's a big Reds fan. So we kind of joke about being our Reds. So they're fun to watch a little bit too, but they're not very good. But I'm kind of a free agent. At some point, I probably let my daughter, who's 8-year-old, pick. If she gets into baseball, I'll root for who she roots for. But, that might end up being the Dodgers. And I don't know if I can do that, really.
That's why we get along.
Yeah.
Well, that or whatever team trades for Miguel Vargas at the deadline. You can just
an early mention of Quad A Miguel Vargas. That's awesome.
Yay. Another couple hits tonight. Yeah. Not too bad. Every time he gets in the lineup.
I thought you were going to go Mason Miller at least, Vlad. You had to go back to Vargas again. We're going to get the therapy couch out again.
But by the way, Mason Miller, is he going anywhere or is he going to stick around on the A's for the rest of the year?
Man, I think he sticks around. I think he's too fun and too good. I think they're going to want someone on the team when they go to Sacramento next year. If you're probably going like pure trade standpoint, trade value, it's probably smart to do. You trade a reliever who are highly variable, peak of his market, a guy who's been injured multiple times. From a pure baseball standpoint, just like in that regard, I think they should trade him. I don't think they will, though. I think it'd be bad for marketing, bad for moving to Sacramento. But from a pure baseball standpoint, I think it makes sense just because relievers are so all over the place year by year.
I chuckled when you said moving to Sacramento. I don't know why, but it just sounds funny.
It's terrible. And I think it's a non-zero chance they end up staying there too. I don't think that stadium in Vegas is getting built.
No, and they're going to sell out Sacramento the first year for sure, and if not longer. They're going to really support that team. Do you think the A's would pull the trigger on a Kobe Mayo for Mason Miller trade?
I would friggin' hope so.
Yeah, it's amazing the value in these guys.
I love Mason Miller. He's fun. He's really nasty. But yeah, you get a stud prospect position player, I think you do it in a second.
By the way, I am you may want to pull out the couch because I'm kind of bummed about one thing, so I don't need really a lot of closers, but I had this like my best epiphanies in fantasy come in the last 2 hours before Fab. Like that's when everything just kind of you just kind of it bubbles to the surface and it comes to you. And I don't know how Miguel Rojas is going to pan out, but those are, he was in the top of my Sunday update, and he was just like the guy I wanted to make sure to get. But what I'm really bummed about is I recognize that the flip side of Michael Kopech and the fact that I can't stand him, he's been absolutely horrible. You look at his ratios. And then I'd looked and noticed that John Brebbia for the last couple of weeks had been fantastic, just like at least 3 weeks or so, just been lights out. And in a scenario like that, if I know I kind of need a closer, I know it's, I don't know who's going to be closing in Toronto after the Emmy Garcia injury, and you know, Mark Leiter Jr. may or may not, whether it's later, it's Leiter, right?
Leiter.
Yes. I don't know when they're going to let him take over for Neris or who it even might be. Nobody wants a job there. Why didn't I just make Brebbia my top ad? Like, he just seemed to me like the natural replacement, and lo and behold, he gets that Monday save. Watch him get another one, and a week from now, he's going to be the guy everyone's bidding on for closer.
You might miss out on the White Sox 5 more wins the rest of the year, Vlad. Be really sad about that.
Mason Miller may not give another save off the rest of the year. It's they may not win another game. Actually, they're winning today, but they're winning by too much right now. But Brebbia is interesting. It'll tell you everything that I have. Jonathan Cannon, and I was super fired that Brebbia came in for the last out and not Kopech. So they'll tell you how I feel about Kopech.
Scott, you have way too many White Sox pitchers from our text thread.
I can't fathom why my wins are so terrible in every league. It makes no sense.
Are you to double digits yet?
I finally got to double digits. I hit 10, I think 11 with Jeff Hoffman today.
We're getting hot.
Yeah.
So as far as the league and things that are a bit surprising, obviously every single year, there are a lot of things that we can and can't predict. I don't think anyone thought the Yankees were just going to lose half their team last year and be horrendous and bottom five in runs and running out guys that we had never really heard of, or, you know, retreads on the team. And now they are the top run producing offense in baseball. So Dodgers, Phillies, things that we expect. But some of the things as far as that surprises you in MLB so far, like for me, looking and seeing that the Rangers and Astros at almost the halfway point of the season are still under 500. Just like, what stands out to you guys as far as surprises, not from a fantasy standpoint, but just a Major League Baseball level?
I've got three if you want them real quick.
Yeah.
The first one is, as of right now, there's one team in baseball that has a double-digit lead in their division. The biggest lead in the division coming in today, biggest lead in the division coming out of today. Seattle Mariners are up 10 games in the AL West. I don't think anybody like knows that, or unless you look it up. They're 10 up on Houston, 10 up on Texas. So to your point about Houston and Texas, yeah, they're surprising, but the fact that Mariners are 13 games over and have a 10-game lead, you know, we're getting into late June right now. That's pretty amazing. They were probably the third most popular team picked to win that division. And a double-digit lead at this point is a massive, massive lead.
Well, it's even more amazing with how good that team is with how bad that offense has been.
Yeah.
I know Julio's starting to heat up, but they have been anemic. But that pitching staff is just dominant, and they're just carrying that. It's like the old the A's with Zito and Mulder and Hudson, right?
Yeah, I mean, they just throw a stud out there just about every night. And, you know, I know Brian Wu is up and down with injury, but when he's healthy, like, they throw five guys out there that can throw a shot at any point. It's pretty wild how good that pitching staff is.
You had to drop the Brian Wu on me, huh?
Had to. It took it took 8 minutes. I had the under was like 7.5.
Good for
what's
you,
the Brian Wu story?
Right before my auction in Vegas, we were talking values, and Jason and I very differently on our Jason Wu evaluation. I liked him, and he had him like down at like 70th in pitching. So we are different there. I'd say it's a push right now. Wu's been out a bunch, pitch well when he's been in, but to be seen who wins that argument.
I cannot take a W on that one with an injury. The skills are really good. And I think Scott's exact question is, did you forget to put him on your sheet?
But and that's very, very nice of you, Scott, but I think that's for a guy that has ERA under 2, granted he's missed some time. I mean, the starts he's had have been phenomenal. So it's
they
not like
been, but you kind of feel like any pitch he throws could be his last one of the season is how it feels right now. It just always is like, you know, and he's fine. And then he misses a start and then he's fine. I mean, it's only been 33 innings. If he gets hurt and doesn't throw any more, then it's hard to take a win on that either. I mean, he has been really good, but he needs to get out there on the mound a little more.
And you said Jason Wu earlier. Is there like some golfer named Jason Wu? Is that like a Freudian slip?
I was so excited to talk to Jason about Brian Wu that I probably just combined the names.
It happens.
I call Tobias Myers Tobias Harris twice on the podcast on Sunday.
Jeff got that's big what kick I wrote. Out of that.
Yeah, he did.
I wrote Tobias Harris in my article, and I got a few DMs right away. By the way, Guardians continue to crush with that lineup. By the way, Josh Naylor, he's still hitting bombs, but he's down to like 230 at this point. And the Brewers in the other Central Division, they seem to be running away with things as well. Cubs are last place there, but how about the Brewers? I don't think a lot of people expected the offense to be this dominant, this hot. You got Wilson Contreras remaining among the top, basically returning first round value through almost halfway, the halfway point in the season. And they're doing it without the pitching staff they expected to have at the beginning of the season. Granted, they weren't the biggest names, but they got rid of Corbin Burns. DL Hall hasn't pitched in quite a while. Jacob Junis, Wade Miley, none of those guys are around. Obviously, Brandon Woodruff hasn't pitched at all this season. So how about those two teams?
It's amazing to trade your ace in Corbin Burns and still have, what do they have, a 6 or 7 game lead in the Central? They just continue to win. I know one of the players came out and said Joey Ortiz was a mistake to trade for the Orioles, but I think the Orioles are pretty happy with Corbin Burns right now and the results they're getting. So that was kind of a win-win trade. The Brewers, nobody really saw that coming. At least I didn't, as far as the effectiveness of that team, the roster construction. You know, it's not really a surprise, but for me, the Yankees, the pitching staff without Garrett Cole and losing Severino, actually, they didn't really have Severino last year, but finding Luis Gil and finding what Clark Schmidt did and, you know, obviously getting Nestor Cortez back. This rotation has carried that team with Stroman, and now getting Garrett Cole back. They're a little scary right now, especially if Judge and Stanton continue to stay healthy and producing.
The best team ERA in baseball last year was Milwaukee at 3.71. The Yankees going into today, and it went down. We're at 3.02 as a team. It's crazy.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And by the way, as people will be listening to the pod as it comes out, Garrett Cole will be pitching. He will be returning to the majors. You've got a big week here with Garrett Cole coming back, Max Scherzer coming back on Friday. He has not pitched in quite a while and not this season yet. And then Bobby Miller, an extended IL stint, he comes back to make his return in Colorado in Coors. So these three guys are coming back. Who are you guys most excited about between those three?
Garrett Cole, for me, one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in baseball, getting healthy, hopefully, and coming back on the mound and pitching. I wish I had some of them, but I did not stash him. I felt it was too long of a time to stash him on my roster to pay off, but could be wrong with that. But I am excited to see him pitch.
For me, it's Cole and Miller, just selfishly, because I have both of them on one of my two main event teams. It's been trying to hang in there while they were hurt. I had no interest in Cole. I kind of agree with Jason on the it was too long to wait, but I think I got him in the 21st or 22nd round. It was the point where I'm like, all right, if I get a bunch of injuries, I'll just drop him at some point at 21st pick. Like, I got to do it at this point. So I've done it. I've held on to him. That team is struggling in wins, so I'm hoping he can get hot on one of the best teams in baseball.
Are you worried about Bobby Miller coming back with how he struggled in the rehab, or he's just trying to get his arm loose?
Very, very worried. I do not like how he looked. I didn't like the velocity was down. I'm not going to freak out about it yet, because some guys just kind of work their way back. But yeah, I'm worried about it. I know everybody's worried about Coors Field this week. I wasn't really worried about that. I was just worried about how he looked in his rehab. They made like an extra outing because he was struggling so much. I like to see him pitch well, because I'm not overly confident about him at the moment. And I came into the season really confident about him.
He looked really good early. Walker Buehler was worried about Coors Field the day after his start.
He was. The Rockies bullpen was worried also.
That was not good. Not good at all. From a perspective of the from the fantasy side, one thing I wanted to ask you about, Scott. I know you've always been more on the cautious, conservative side with injuries. I remember over the years, like me telling you, "Hey, oh, this guy's coming back. It's going to be, you know, 4 to 6 weeks." I feel like I've had more success in fantasy this year, making the right decisions by erring on the side of caution. It's just something that has finally, I guess, sort of sunk in for me. Even down to like a Christian Encarnacion, everything that was going on with him, and you just know these things, they just backfire. I feel like we're always on pins and needles, like waiting to see who's next, and then boom, and Mookie Betts gets hurt, and we all got scared here on Tuesday with with Aaron Judge, but it's just, it's really something here. And even with like Wilson Contreras, he was available in quite a few of my 12 team OCs. And I was afraid to go too big on him, even on teams where I needed catcher, because, hey, it sounds like he'll be back in a week or two and he's in rehab. And then it just a setback out of nowhere. So I feel like I've adapted that mindset a little bit more and have been successful in avoiding zeros more often.
Yeah. And I think you have to accept that you are going to, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to have some guys that do come back on the short end of stints, but I think it's in the minority. I think almost every guy, when they come out with the time frame, I just assume it's the late one and then assume it's probably going to be a week or two after that. You know, offensive players, maybe a little bit less than that. Pitchers, I always assume it's going to be a little bit longer. You know, they always do the shutdown for 2 weeks. I just add a month to that because they're going to ramp back up. But you're going to make some mistakes. Like I dropped Tristan Casas, and I might end up regretting that. He's going to come back in July. I couldn't hold on to him. So, you know, when you do it, I always err on the fact I think they're going to, you know, be out longer than they are. Bench spots are really valuable to me. I do a lot of shifting, and I like to make sure that I can bench pitchers and stuff. But you have to know that a few times is going to be a mistake, and guys are come back on the early part of the time frame. You're going to pay for it. But I think on the percentages over the long term, it pays to be really really conservative on those injury comebacks.
And to Scott's point with the pitchers, it's not just them coming back, you know, at the high end of the time frame. It's you really can't use them for the first, if not two or three starts, because they're not stretched out long enough to go five innings and get you a win. So what is the point of using a pitcher for three or four innings in that case, unless, you know, it's Jacob DeGrom or even Garrett Cole, which I think Garrett Cole will come back and pitch six innings, no problem. But most pitchers are usually a slow ramp up. So that timeline just extends even further. And, you know, one of the statements that helped me out tremendously was, if you don't make a bad drop in the year, you're not doing Fab right. And so being aggressive on your drops, it really does matter. And you're going to look back through your Fab every year and be like, man, I wish I didn't drop that guy. But if you're not cycling your roster, if you're not looking for the next thing, you're going to get passed up pretty quickly.
And I have exponentially more when I look at the Fab drops. They're like, I wish I had been a little more aggressive on that guy. I wish I had got that guy a week early more than there's always a couple drops I regret, but man, there are so many pickups I wish I just got a few more bucks on, or gone a week earlier on a lot of times. Vlad's really good at that. I think that of anybody I know, Vlad's the best at like getting that week early guy. And I try and follow that. And I always read the column, but you're always really good at grabbing that a week before I do.
By the way, speaking of week before, Jason and Maddie, we talked about this on the show last week, the team you guys co-manage, grabbing Yariel Rodriguez early, and I wanted him this week, and I had him as the top pitcher bid, and I got him in places, and some places I overbid, and then I didn't immediately regret it afterwards, but when you see a wide range in price in your leagues, like if I'm getting him for like, you know, 60 and then the backup bid was 30, you start to question things a little bit. And I understand he did have a higher bid range. There were other leagues where he was a little bit closer in that regard. But I was just thinking about like him coming back right away. He was already kind of a borderline five inning guy, and I could just see him. He's going to pitch what, Friday in Cleveland most likely. They're probably going to do piggybacking with him and Bowden Francis, and he may not even be qualifying for wins, and I don't know how long that's going to be.
Yeah, I can just dream that they do the opener with Trevor Rogers for two innings and have him come in the third inning, because that would be just a perfect scenario, and go and let it air out for four, if not five innings. But if he only goes 80 pitches, you really don't see getting to six innings anytime. So you're looking at five innings max. It's hard to get wins in that case. I think that's what tempered the bids. I was still a little surprised after the 10 strikeout game in the minors that his bids weren't higher. I think I was talking to Matt, and he got him for less than $10 in one of his leagues. That he was out of money, but he threw a bid on him, and I got him for the leagues I didn't have him, had got him for about 30 something, with the backup bids were not really that competitive, so his prices were a little tempered, but everybody's saving their money, it seems like.
That, or they're just like trying to go for the thinking that they're going to collect last week's stats on DJ Hurst right before he goes to Coors Field and then goes back to the minors in 2 weeks when Josiah Gray comes back.
It's the thing about people saving their money is interesting, because a lot of people have a lot of money this year. There haven't been that, like, there's been a few big bids, but not nothing compared to last year. We felt like we had a stud rookie for $300 every week last year, and everybody grabbed one of them. So everybody was down in money. There are so many teams in my leagues that have $400, $500, $600. It's going to be really interesting. I think the second half, we're going to see a lot more big bids on kind of mediocre players than we're used to in the past. Usually it's like later in the year, you can get a lot of guys for $10, $15. I don't know if that's going to be the case this year. I think a lot more teams have money than usual.
Yeah, I think I read that the average FAB is $200 more than it was at this point last year for the main event, which is just nuts.
Nobody's going to want to take that money home, or you have that money, I have too much in September. These next couple of months are going to be a lot of big bids.
Yeah, Todd Whitestone breaks it down pretty well on his Whitestone's Waiver Watch column. Comes out Mondays on FTN Fantasy. It's free. Check that out. He breaks down the average winning bids, some of the trends in MLB and also in the main event. So it's pretty cool. And if you scroll down, you'll probably see all the main event placers, where you'll usually see Scott Genstad there first, second, or third.
Hey, Vlad, let me ask Scott.
Not right now.
I think you got time to come back.
Yeah,
Scott, let
yeah,
me ask you a question.
Yeah.
FAB, last month of the season, what's the ideal amount of FAB to have left for you in the main?
Obviously it depends on, if I'm trailing and I need something, it changes, but $75 on September 1st is always my number. I think if you have $75, you've done pretty well in spending a lot, making a lot of pickups, but it gives you, with 4 weeks left, it gives you always not necessarily the hammer. There's always going to be some team with a lot of money, but it gives you that chance to go $25, $30 on someone if you really want someone. I think that you really want to be able to, if you have a two-step pitcher, it depends what you need. If someone gets called up, if someone gets hurt, I always want to be able to go 20 to 30 on maybe that one or two more guys the last couple months. So I use $75 to kind of my benchmark. It's not a hard rule, but that's kind of my my ballpark number I want on 9-1.
And of course, he always has double that. That's no joke.
I try not to. I have in the past. I'm trying not to as much, but there are times you can have too much at the end too. And like, there have been years where I'm like, oh, I'm going to bet, $50 on someone and the backup's $3 and nobody has money. You don't want too much, but you want enough where you can beat almost anybody for that one guy you want.
I mean, my magic number has been 100. Usually I think I'm trending at this point to be under that, of course, by the time September rolls around, but I have pulled back on certain weeks, and I think I've been a lot better at just going lower on bids. Like, the setting after a second or third guy, there's no reason to be going like 12 and then 11 and then 10. You can just set your favorite order on those conditionals within that bid group for, $1 to $3, and you're most likely to land on someone, because even in competitive leagues, everyone's bidding, but a lot of times they're getting their guys, and then your fourth guy, you could end up overspending, $10 when you can be getting them for like one or two.
And the real key for me that I try and do on that one is, like, if I'm picking up two guys on that second set of bids, I really drop those. So if I get that first guy, I don't want to get stuck with two guys at a decent price. So I drop the second set of bids, I drop way low and just try and sneak someone through, just in case, if you get someone for 25, you want to make sure the next guy you don't get for 22 if you don't need to. So my second set of bids, I always drop a lot lower than the first set of bids.
And I'm assuming for both of you, it's a little team dependent. Like, if your team's in ninth or 10th place, you're going to be a little more aggressive towards the last month. Matt always says, there's no point saving your FAB to get sixth place. You might as well, burn it and try to climb that leaderboard and get lucky with injuries the last week. If you have a team that's on the border. Now, if you have a team that's competing, having that flexibility is huge in that last month.
Yeah, if you're ninth like I am right now, you might as well, you want to get 3.5 months out of someone, because that's the way you're going to catch up. You're not catching up getting 2 weeks of stats from somebody.
Yeah,
I catch myself spending a lot more time on my super auction team bids, because it's just, I love this team. I constructed it outside of a snake draft and got the players I want. It's competitive. But Mike Mager is in that league, and he's been winning the auction championship overall for a very long time. I've been sort of chipping away, but in that league, I have the most money left. I mean, that's where I have like $400-$500 or something. But what's keeping me in check there is every time I go and I click in the teams and their bid amounts, I'm seeing Mike Mager, Toby, Jenny, other people in that league with like $700 left. And I just know where that is heading towards, especially if things are competitive. They're going to win everyone they want down the stretch. So I'm trying to be very cautious and careful not to overspend there.
How much do you have there?
About 480.
All right. It sounds like you need to cut Jenny and Mike off the FAB article for a couple of weeks, and so you can catch up to them.
Well, you know what? I'm doing the absolute worst thing is I'm tempting the roto gods, because I'm posting my massive ERA and WHIP leads, and so of course John Gray came upon me on Monday, and then of course I sat Alec Marsh for the at Yankees one hit gem. And then he gets crushed by the A's on Tuesday. So that's baseball for you.
It's been like 9,000 years, and you still haven't learned to not do that.
We talked about karma, Vlad, preseason. It is fickle, man. You can't play that game.
No.
It's like the year you posted I was first overall. I think I had 9 blowups the next week. So it all comes around.
The old Vlad curse got Scott again.
The Vlad curse is very strong.
So how about Ben Rice? what an awesome prospect. Catcher eligibility. He's going to be playing first base for a while. I mean, Anthony Rizzo won't even be active for, 8 weeks or something like that. So he's promoted, and, I mean, he could be an interesting bid. He got, a couple of hits in his first game, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, he's I did a little dive on him before we started the pod, and it's kind of shocking to me. He's so lowly rated in the prospect farm system for the Yankees. He's produced at every level, all the way back to 2023 when he was at, I think, 155 WRC plus, went up to 205 in high A, 182 in double A, 151 in double A this year, and then 181 in triple A. The guy is well above average minor league player, got lots of power. Really good walk rate. Strikeout rate isn't terrible for the profile, and he has a little speed. Could be really interesting if he gets a run, but you have DJ LeMahieu sitting there that can slide over to first base and really take playing time. So I don't know what the Yankees' plan on him is, but very intriguing for me.
Yeah, I think your point about the plan is kind of the most important thing, but all the guys you're talking about, you know, LeMahieu, Cabrera, like none of them are really like, you got to force them in lineup. If he can just, I think his first couple of weeks are really important. If he just get a little bit warm, I think he could stick. When it comes to prospects, the guys I really like, it's not the sexy guys who have a bunch of stolen bases but strike out a lot. I love the guys that come up and walk a lot and don't strike out a lot, because you're going to strike out more your first time through. And if you can survive a little bump, you know, maybe he goes to 24%, but you can deal with that. I mean, he's a 16% strikeout walk rate in AAA this year. He was a 14% walk rate in AA so far this year. He had a lot of double digit walk rates in the minors. I love a guy like that who's disciplined, and you stick him in this lineup. I mean, you kind of, as long as you get on base, like, you're going to score runs, you're going to drive in some runs, you got guys on base. I'm intrigued by him. And obviously the catcher eligibility is what everybody's going to care about. That's massive in the NFBC, because there are a lot of second catchers who are doing nothing right now.
Last couple of weeks, Jason and I have been talking about our rabbi's favorite son, Spencer Horwitz, actually the grandson of Jay Horwitz, who's been with the Mets organization public relations for 45 years. But he's another one of those examples. Something that really stood out to me was his Bregman-like, walks to strikeout ratio. It's the type of stuff I'm looking for. Kind of the opposite of that would be like a Nolan Gorman. A guy that I remember everybody was talking about. Oh, it's going to be big power, but you just don't know. You catch those ebbs and flows, and the guy comes up from the minors. He's a 30% strikeout guy. He has a cold streak. He's going to get sent down. So those are the type of profiles I like. I think even Justin Henry Malloy hasn't been off to the best start for the first couple of weeks, but he's another one of those guys that profiles as a high walk rate guy. And you're right. Those are the players that I like to go after in Fab.
Yeah, I like Horwitz. I added a couple spots. I just wonder if he's going to have enough power for a corner spot. I think it's going to be tough to get there. But, you know, hitting 333 so far. So I think the average could be nice. But if you need pop, I'm not sure he delivers there.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that. He's almost at the end of the week. He should be second base eligible.
Oh, that is nice. That helps a lot. That's right. That's a good point right there. I wish he was ready to add him Horwitz. That'd be better than whatever Horwitz you mentioned.
Oh yeah, but there's no, but this different. There's no O, but your autocorrect will probably throw the O in the middle to make it Horwitz, because that's the more popular last name. But he's Horwitz.
But if he was related to Ad Rock, I would have bid like triple.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
no doubt. Orelvis Martinez, or Elvis. It's just it's a great name. You're talking great names here. What are the chances he sticks around when Bo Bichette returns? Like, if he's just hot and he's crushing it like he had been in the minors a few weeks ago, I think he's a much ballyhooed prospect. Everyone's been waiting for him. A lot of teams are going to need power. And he's another guy that I think is going to give you multiple positions of eligibility, because he's a shortstop, if I'm not mistaken, in NFBC for those who drafted him in DCs. And now he's going to play some corner probably.
Speaking of the big O, or Elvis, he is probably going to play shortstop right now, isn't he, Vlad, with Bo being out?
Or Kiner Falefa mixed in. I don't know.
Oh, the old falafel. He's blocking more studs coming up. Orelvis is interesting. I got onto him in preseason when we were talking, and somebody compared him to a better version of a young Hanley Ramirez, and that really piqued my interest. A great hit tool. Anytime you say Hanley, he was really fun to watch. Kind of feeling old now that he's not playing anymore, but he great hit tool, looking a little deeper, a lot of swing and miss, not a lot of walk, really aggressive swinger. If he can get on a run, I think that he can, I think he can hold down the job and kind of push IKF, kind of Falefa to a utility role. But like Scott said, he's got to start hot because these rookies are going to struggle. So they need to build up a little leash with their managers.
Yeah, he's 22, but I really like how much he's improved as a hard contact this year. He was kind of a toolsy guy last year, but only 35% hard contact. He's up to 46% this year in 270 plate appearances. So the power looks real, and the guy's developed another power, and he's 22, and maybe he's doing just that. The other thing I like is that there's just plenty of room right now there, even when Bo comes back. I mean, I know we like Spencer Horowitz, but like, he's not really going to block anybody. Ernie Clement's playing third base. Kiner Falefa is at shortstop right now. Justin Turner has been horrible at DH. Like, there are just a lot of paths for Martinez to stick. It's just a matter of the Blue Jays want him to stick. I think if they, they're kind of in the midst right now. They don't know where they're going to trade guys. They're not going to go for it. But I just think there's a lot of ways where he can find himself in a playing time. They have a lot of spots in this lineup that aren't producing. And I think that if Orover starts hot, like Jason mentioned, there are just many, many ways they can get him in the lineup.
We are going to talk about a few more things here. We've got Scott here for a little bit. Scott Jenstad of RotoWire. You can follow him on the X on Twitter, at Scott Jenstad. Jason is at Booms62. I'm at RotoGut. But before we do, I want to tell you that if you love fantasy, obviously you do, you're going to want to buy this book. It is called The History of Fantasy Sports. This is not a paid ad. This is nothing. I'm reading it right now, and it's written by Larry Schechter. Get it on Amazon. It's phenomenal. It's just a walk through the entire history of fantasy from the very beginning through the 80s and 90s, all the legal battles, all the companies that struggled and made it. The work that he did on this and all the interviews is amazing. So I highly recommend you check it out. It's quite the joy to read. So definitely do that. And then also, a message from our sponsor at Underdog Fantasy. If you want to make money making picks on MLB games, then you got to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball player and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like hits, strikeouts, and more. You pick 2 to 5 players and win all, make the right picks and win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit to $100. So you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN. Get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, and in Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. And if you happen to follow fantasy football, highly recommend you check out all of our stuff at ftnfantasy.com, home of Jeff Ratcliffe, home of Aaron Schatz, and our DVOA metric, building up more things on the stat side. And of course, we've got a team of, 50, 60 play charters for the NFL. So definitely a lot of fun there. All right.
Mason Miller just murdered Michael Garcia. My God. It was nasty.
He has a habit of doing that good hitters.
We jinxed him into a save-op. It was beautiful.
Did he get it?
No, he's got two outs and two strikes. He's facing Bobby Witt right now.
Nice. Speaking of, actually, these guys have nothing to do with those guys, but I wanted to ask you, about some of these players that we've been tracking, Jason and I have been tracking, that were kind of interesting, intriguing prospects or really young guys, very inexperienced, that had good starts, good rookie seasons, and have since fallen off or have been demoted to the minors. So I wanted to ask you guys, who do you think of these three would be called up first and who might have the best second half impact, who you might be most interested in. And I'll just break them down real quick. Two of them are teammates. One is Parker Meadows. We keep talking about him, but in 33 AAA games so far, he's got 7 bombs, 13 stolen bases, a 13% walk rate. And then there's Spencer Torkelson, who hit 4 home runs in the first 2 months of the season. And then I think it was 35 or 33 or something insane in the second. I mean, basically in the last 4 months of the season, he was demoted 2 weeks ago. He started off pretty hot. He's cooled off since, just 1 home run in 12 games there. And then the third guy is Jordan Walker, a bit of a mixed bag. We had been waiting for him to hit a home run in the majors, never did. And then it took a while for him to do so in the minors. But he's got a 130 ISO right now in 37 AAA games. He's getting a bunch of hits, doubles, hitting barrels, but it's not really happening. So, Scott, break these guys down for me. Who do you like the best? Who stands out? Or maybe none of them?
For me, it's Jordan Walker. I actually added him across 3 leagues this last week. Mostly for me, it was kind of the very recent performance. Like his last 40 plate appearances, the hard hits up, striking out a bit less, walking more. WRC plus has been really high over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, he went down there with actually something to fix. It's not just like he was slumping. He was just not elevating the ball. They're working on that. They're actually working on something with him. They sent him down for a reason with the thought that, you know, you're back up, but you gotta work on this stuff. So for me, it's Walker. I just think that the Cardinals clearly have a need for him. There's a lot of spots in their lineup where they could really use some improvement. There's a lot of just kind of middling guys in that lineup. You know, you're talking about Matt Carpenter's DHing, Michael Ciani's in center. They got Brandon Crawford in the roster. Sorry to Jason for the Giant slander there, but, you know, Crawford's been done for a while. I just think that the fits there with both Meadows and Torkelson, I have not been interested in re-adding them. Torkelson's hard hit metrics were so far down in the first couple months. I'm beginning to wonder, like, it's been 3 years now. Maybe that was like 2 months in the second half last year with the outlier.
Yeah. By the way, before Jason jumps in on that, side note on Brandon Crawford, so many years. How many years in the majors, by the way? What, 14?
A lot.
Do you know off the top of your head? Yeah. And so he was planning to make his first start ever outside of the shortstop position. He was going to play third base, and that's where he was, you know, they set the lineup for him. And then Mason Wynn got scratched, so he got moved back to shortstop. But that's pretty funny.
It's like Alex Rodriguez, except not.
That was an ode to the Carlos Correa signing when he was going to play third for the Giants for 2 days. That fell through. Speaking of Jordan Walker, I think third base, they have a need there with how bad Arenado's been. And isn't that his normal position, Scott?
Yeah, Arenado's not been good. I mean, obviously he's not taken his job, but man, the Cardinals could use some offense. The Cardinals are playing well. And the most fascinating thing in baseball right now, we didn't hit it at the top when we're talking about the standings, but the entire National League, except for essentially the Marlins and the Rockies, are all in the playoff race. There's two teams that are out of it, and they're like teams two through nine in the wild card, or we're separated by like 2 games. Like every single team is in this, except for the Marlins and Rockies. Cardinals are right in it. I think a couple of these teams got to call some guys up, got to make some trades. It's going to be really active at the deadline because there's so many teams that are in the mix right now. And I think that Jordan Walker kind of is going to be the, you know, we don't need to make a trade. We're just going to call up Walker instead. I'm pretty high on him having a good second half.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating trade deadline, but yeah, Not a lot of sellers. So the price is going to be pretty high, supply and demand. So it'll be interesting how many players actually move. But Jordan Walker, I think you're right on the money with that. He got sent down last year, came back up second half and produced. I think out of those three, he's easily the guy I would want most. The guy I think is going to come up quickest would be Parker Meadows. They are running out Keel Badu out there, and I can't even pronounce the other outfielder's name. They're running out there right now. Wenciel, who the bloom is off the rose on him too. He's been terrible the last 30 days. And Meadows is starting to look like himself with the guy we drafted for the speed and power upside. So I do believe he should be up here in the next couple of weeks. I hope he is, because I have him stashed. I'm not going to be able to hold him too much longer with injuries, so I'm a little worried about that.
The big thing, I think, with Meadows, the strikeout rate's been way down in AAA. It was an absurdly high in the majors. He obviously had a problem there, but he's never been a huge strikeout guy except for like his rookie ball early years. So I think, you know, just making contact, getting the swing and miss out of there is really going to be really important for him. He's a 14% swing strike rate guy in the majors this year. That's the key for him. As long as he can get on base, he's going to be fantasy viable because he'll steal bases.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that were high on him, Parker Meadows, before the season started, if you obviously you hadn't been holding him in that long, but if you're able to snag him back for a couple dollars. I do think he's the guy that's going to be up next and can make the most most fantasy impact. Obviously, with the stolen bases, with a bit of power, I think he can get back up to the top of the lineup and platoon with Matt Vierling. Let Matt Vierling continue to lead off against the lefties and Parker Meadows against the righties. And I do think Wencil Perez is probably the guy that's going to be demoted, as you mentioned. Last few weeks he has just been horrendous. Both him and Akil Baddoo, they're around 24, 25 years old, but both of those guys have a couple of options left. And then I don't know how quickly they're going to rush back Spencer Torkelson. So I do have him in that auction team and I do need power. So I would love a little burst from him, but it's not really the type of profile that I like. He is somebody that I was not very interested in. Call it batting average snob, whatever you want. Like just those guys that are averaging, 230, 240 a season. I just can't stomach that because that means you're going to have, Randy or Rosarena type stretches for a couple of months. So can't handle that.
Bo Bichette was just insulted by you.
and Pablo Lopez is offended. You don't think Randy or Rosarena is good because he gave up a bomb to him today.
Who hasn't he given up a bomb to this year, Scott?
Is he the most disappointing player in fantasy?
Well, for being healthy, I'd have to say one top three for sure. His big thing was always health and he just, the skills, in his whip's not incredibly bad, but it's not good for an ace. 1.25 whip and the ERA, but mid fives now, and he just can't seem to figure it out.
He's bottom five in the entire league in ERA among starters who qualify, and he was like a late second, early third round pick in main events. And I mean, he just kills you every time he's out there, and you have to keep pitching him because you're like, I drafted him, I don't want to miss the turnaround. But man, 5.63 ERA just absolutely kills your team.
Yeah,
I think some
yeah.
people might argue that Corbin Carroll might be the most disappointing considering the season he had last year, the massive rookie of the year. One of the cool things is, obviously player raters are all the rage, or at least they are for me. I love looking at them, and Razzball's has had a phenomenal one for years. Fangraphs, Kellen Arneson has developed one over there, NFBC player. And, if I just go to their player rater and I sort by ADP, and then it shows me the dollar values. So where you have guys like Kyle Tucker, who's like been out for the last couple of weeks, has earned $27. Bobby Witt Jr. has been top three player all year. He's earned about 45. Even Acuna, who we haven't seen in a while and struggled with the home runs, has earned $8. Corbin Carroll so far, $2.40. And the dude's hitting like 215.
You are right. He's been the most disappointing. I got to go Pablo second. You are right. I have Carroll as my first pick in the main event. So happy he was not injured. He came back and he's turned around a little bit. He's hitting like 295 in June after an awful, awful couple months. So I think he's going to get warm, but there is no way he can get remotely close to earning that draft prize. That 2.5 bad months, it kills you.
On this topic, looking at and segmenting first half hitters who have been incredibly profitable. And I'm just going to batch a few infielders here together and then a few outfielders, just guys that have been greatly outperforming their draft day price. And I wanted to ask you guys, starting with the infielders, as far as like a buy, sell, hold type scenario, and you could say buy for all of them or sell whatnot. But these are guys that have greatly outproduced their ADP so far. These are all top 30 players in player raters, basically. But one of them is Alec Bohm. Incredibly interesting to me because so he is in that prime spot in that awesome Philly offense, hidden behind Harper. He's been doing it for a while now, since last year. But not only is he like fourth in or top five in RBI this season, he's one of the only few with 60 plus. He's like fourth in RBI since the beginning of last year. So this has been going on for quite some time. He had an ADP of like 150 and then he got kind of unsexy, was going like 175. So there's him. There's Jordan Westberg, who I believe got hurt today. And he's like third, right? Is he okay?
Yeah. I already was sore. I don't know how bad it was. But
It was a left hip discomfort after his collision with Soto.
Okay. Yeah. So he's hitting really well. He's hitting like 280 pretty much, but he's got like an expected batting average closer to 300, contributing across the board, getting some leadoff work, 11% barrel rate, 48% hard hit rate. And then there's Mikel Garcia. Average isn't great. Expected metrics show him that he should be better. Top of the lineup, that valuable spot in front of Bobby Witt Jr., lots of stolen bases. How do you feel about those three guys? Who do you like the best? Who do you like the worst? Buy, sell, hold.
For me, I would buy Bohm and Michael Garcia. It's amazing how dangerous the Phillies' offense has been without Trey Turner at the top of it. And adding him back to batting at the top of that lineup, it just gets deeper. And Bohm is not, it's not a fluke. The guy hits RBIs. I know his batting average has really dropped here in the last month and a half from what it started out, but the RBIs are real. The guy knows how to drive and runs. Not a ton of power, but you're going to get a pretty good batting average with a lot of RBIs. With first and third eligibility, it's really helpful. And then Michael Garcia being able to get a third baseman that steals bases at the top of a lineup that scores a ton of runs, which is a little shocking. I'm really happy I got him on a couple teams playing in my corner or third base spot.
Vlad won't be surprised here, but I'm buying Alec Bohm. We talked about him a lot last year when Vlad had him on one of his really good teams. This guy's just a stud, and he's getting better. Hard hit rate's up 4% this year, while the strikeout rate's down 2%. He's a 13.5% strikeout rate guy right now. For a guy who's driving in runs, I know the power upside's not huge, but you hit in the middle of this Phillies lineup, if you just don't strike out, put the ball in play, and he's got a 46% hard hit rate, put him in play well, you know, his cap might be 20 home runs, but he could drive in 115. I love what I've seen from Bohm. This lineup is so good. I'm actually a buy on all three guys. I think Westberg, really encouraging strikeout drop while also increasing his hard contact. Big bump in his barrel rate too. You know, you see a lot of second-year guys or early young guys that, you know, when they drop that K rate, all the hard contact goes away too. So you see with Volpe this year. Like, he's having a great year, but you can tell that he's trying to avoid the strikeouts, but the hard contact's gone down too. It's just natural. You're trying to put the ball in play. But Westberg's been dropping that while also increasing hard contact. I love what I see there. And then, you know, Michael, so good. You mentioned the stolen bases from third base is huge, but he leading off in front of Bobby Witt too. Like, just get on base a little bit. He's going to drive you in. I think all three guys, if I'm in a trade league, I'm holding all of them, not selling any of them, and I want all three of them on my team.
One interesting note about Alec Bohm. So he was red hot, obviously, towards the end of March, beginning of the year, that is, and through April, and then he just went ice cold. So there was a three-week stretch that started the 24th of May, and it started in Coors Field, ironically. For 3 weeks, he hit 175. With a 221 on base percentage, just one home run and only six RBI. And obviously he's got 60 plus. And so the rest is that damage he's done around that time. And by the way, I think, what is it? He's got four or five straight multi-hit games. So he's basically got like three hits in each of those last like five games.
I was about to say he's got 11 hits in the last four games. So I think he's back to normal. I mean, it's baseball. It's really hard. Every guy, you're going to be able to find some slumps in there. That's why, you know, people really overreact to the start of the year, guys, because, you know, everybody's going to have a three-week stretch in the middle of the season where they struggle. But you stick Bohm in the middle of that lineup, and you just kind of fall in the stats. Even when you're struggling, you're going to score some runs. You can drive some runs in. For where he got drafted, he's been fantastic. I love Bohm.
Speaking of three-week stretch, I know we're going to talk about him in the prediction section, Vlad, but has anybody seen a Stephen Kwan, like that three-week stretch, what Stephen Kwan just did?
He's batting over 500. It looks like a co-ed rec softball team line. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to unretire from co-ed and some softball and go try to beat that, because I'm embarrassing myself not being able to beat Stephen Kwan's batting average.
You know, John Fish is just like running all over his state. You know, streaking on that. That's the biggest Stephen Kwan fan I know.
Yeah, streak now because the downfall's coming.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute, because I do want to get your thoughts on Stephen Kwan. If you're in a trade league, you're good on corner infield, middle infield, you're set on hitting, and you really kind of need a pitcher, you have Jordan Westberg, and somebody offers you Pablo Lopez. Do you make that deal?
I take Lopez for the rest of the year.
I do too. By the bounce.
All right. On the outfields here, three outfielders I'll mention. One guy just maybe seems like he stands out a little bit more than the other two, but that's Marcelo Ozuna, who's at the moment in contention for the NL Triple Crown. And man, he's just mashing, like just literally, you know, your joke, Jason, just, you know, probably going to go on the IL soon for carrying that offense on his back for so long. That's Marcelo Ozuna. Just absolutely insane. The most impressive part is kind of like how much utility only players just get no love. And Scott, you know, because you and I have been just like, you know, swimming like Scrooge McDuck in money from Nelson Cruz being undervalued and just like grabbing him every year. We had the same thing with Poppy, you know, David Ortiz over a decade ago, like just always undervalued because of the UT only. And here we go again with an Ohtani at the end of the first round where we didn't know what team he'd be on. Look at him, you know, top two player. And same thing with Marcell Ozuna. Like, he is on an amazing run, and it doesn't look like he's going to slow down. So that's one guy. The other two are Riley Green on pace for 30 homers, 100 RBI. Another guy that was going in that range where Ozuna was, his near 15% barrel rate. That's top 20 in the majors. And then the third is the ever surprising Jerkson Profar, top 25 in the league in runs, in RBI. He's up there among the batting average leaders. And then most impressively, he's got a walks to K ratio of nearly one, which is the closest he's ever come to being near even there. So let's break those three down.
I'm bitter. I remember talking about Marcell Ozuna with you, Vlad, in the preseason, and we went back and forth, and it was somebody I really liked, but looking into the profile, he couldn't figure out who he was. It was 1 year he was terrible, 1 year he was good, half a year he was good, half a year he was bad. And I talked myself out of him, and coming off of that previous year in that lineup, it's amazing what he's doing single-handedly carrying that lineup, because there's so many studs that are struggling around him. And then Riley Green being a year too early on that profile. I was all in on him last year, got the injury. I was worried about the injury. Hitters coming off of that Tommy John surgery, I just backed off of him too much. And he was a guy a lot of smart people were on in draft season, and he's really paying off right now. So those are the two. Profar, it's pretty cool to see somebody that had such a high pedigree and struggled for so long finally start to produce. But he was one of the worst hitters in the league last year. I don't know what he ends up being this year, but hope it stays good, because it's a good story.
It's a great story. I mean, he was not only a high prospect, he was like the number one prospect a few years ago. I mean, it's great to see. Nothing really to add on Ozuna. I'll just give you the top five barrel rates in baseball are Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, Shohei Ohtani, and Marcell Ozuna. I mean, it's just, he is among the elites right now in hard contact, in a great lineup, and a lineup that's going to get better. I mean, Austin Riley started to hit. I don't think we have any doubt Matt Olson's going to hit. You know, I know Acuna's not there, but it's still going to be a lineup that scores a lot of runs. I love Riley Green. Vlad noted in the outline, you know, top 20 in barrel rate right now at 14.5%. He was a big target for me. Missed him in one main, got him in the other one. Strikeout rate's a little bit too high. It's going to keep the batting average down, but the BABIP's also low. He's at 312. His career is a lot higher than that. So I think maybe you get a little bit of bounce there. Really good walk gains, which you love to see. So I he's hit fourth a bunch for the Tigers. Love Riley Green. I love the Profar story, but his career BABIP's 273. He's currently at 355. It's just going to regress. But I mean, if you took Profar, you got him in the last round, or you got him in Fab, he's already turned such a massive problem for you. I don't think you care at this point. But, you know, he doesn't have enough hard contact to keep up this power bump right now either. You know, strikeout walk gains are nice, but I think we're going to see a pretty quiet second half from Profar. But at this point, it doesn't matter. You've scored so big time if you took him.
As an aside, a teammate of Profar's, Manny Machado, how do you guys feel about him the rest of the year? Because he's basically pacing for what is going to be his worst season in many years, and obviously coming off the major injury, and maybe, I don't know, came back too quickly. Overall, yeah, I mean, he averaged 30 home runs in each of the last three seasons. He's at six right now in nearly 300 plate appearances, five stolen bases, hitting 250, 28 runs, 33 RBI. If you look at his Statcast metrics, they aren't all that bad. He's actually hitting the ball harder than he had the previous few seasons. Barrel rate's about in line, even hard hit rate's a little higher than it was last year. How do you guys feel about Machado?
Too many ground balls. The problem is his fly ball rate's down 10% right now. I don't know if that's an injury thing, but the reason he doesn't have the home runs, he's not hitting the ball in the air. If he can fix that, get the launch angle right, the hard contact's there, I think he'll be fine. But you know, if he's going to be a 34% fly ball guy, we'd clearly change what we think he's going to have for a home run peak. If he could fix that, he was 44% last year, 45%. That's what I see in Machado, is just too many ground balls.
That's one of my biggest weaknesses with a player of his caliber. I don't look close enough about the stats, and I've been just rolling them out in one of my really good OCs. And I probably should have him on the bench for a better third baseman option right now. Those stats from what you're hoping you get out of Manny Machado aren't even close. You know, the metrics look right, but is he still not right with the injury? Did he come back too soon? Is he still battling something? It'll be interesting how his second half goes. You can see him take off or you can see him go on the IL. I mean, it's really a two true outcome player with what's going to happen in the second half with him.
I think you'll see him take off. I think he'll, he's going to get fully healthy. He's going to feel a little better. Obviously, you could tell he wasn't fully there the first month or so when he finally came back. I think you're going to see a pretty good second half from Machado. If I'm you, I'm keeping him in that lineup.
All right. I want to run through a bit of a predictions section here to end the episode. Before I do, I want to ask your thoughts on what's going to happen in the Cubs bullpen. Like, are they just giving up? Are they going to be sellers at this point? They're going to what's going to happen there? Because not only has Hector Neris been flat out awful, and I think, Scott, you've been talking about this for a while. Jason and I have been noting it. Mark Leiter Jr. has not really, he's been better, but not by all that much. And opportunities that he received closing in the past hadn't really materialized. The Hayden Wesneski thing doesn't seem to be really working out. Some say that Tyson Miller doesn't really profile for it, but he obviously, I think maybe can handle the role. And then, of course, there's Ben Brown currently in the IL. That's who everybody wants to see. But they're not really in the market to be trading right now, are they?
No, it is a disaster. A name that came to mind for me was a former $300 fab guy from a year or two ago. It was Julian Merriweather coming back off the IL in a couple weeks, a month. He's got the skill set to hold that role down, just can't he get healthy. But that bullpen is an absolute dumpster fire. It is hard to watch. As a Giants fan last night watching Thyro Estrada hit that three-run homer, that was fun for me. But I couldn't imagine being a Cubs fan watching that. There was some crazy stat about what the Cubs record would be if the games ended after seven innings. They would be like 30 games over 500. I don't know what it actually was, but it blew my mind looking at it, how many games they've blown this year in the eighth and ninth inning. They just have nobody to put back there. It's not the manager's fault.
It kind of goes to my point that I mentioned earlier about everybody being in it. After tonight's win, they're a game and a half out of the playoffs right now. Like, I know it's been a disaster. I know it's been bad, but they can't sell. Keegan Thompson got the save tonight. So, he's got a huge strikeout rate and only 13 innings so far. I really like Tyson Miller. I mean, he's been awesome so far this year. Strikeout rate's been huge. I think he's walked like two guys all year or something like that. He's got a 3% walk rate. I think Miller and Keegan Thompson, who they used tonight, they went Miller got the win. Thompson got the save. I think they shift to these two guys pretty quickly here because, what do they have to lose? And they might as well go with guys who have shown some upside so far this year because, Neris and Leiter are not doing the job. I go probably Keegan Thompson 1 and Miller 2 if I'm speculating in the Cubs bullpen right this moment.
All right. Predictions time. Got a few of them for you here, starting with Stephen Kwan. So Stephen Kwan went into Tuesday night hitting .398 this season, not yet qualified, but he went 1-for-5 and dropped the average down to like .392. So my question to you is, if he stays healthy the rest of the year and he qualifies, I think obviously a very strong AL batting average champ here, but where do you think his batting average ends up?
I would say .360. Would be a guess for me. That'd cool off a little bit, but the guy, he has a bat to ball profile that can really carry that batting average. You're not getting much else other than runs out of him. No power. The speed has kind of disintegrated too. So you're getting runs and you're getting batting average, but he's kind of what we hoped Luis Arraez would be by drafting him. But somebody I was an avoid in draft season, but is just carrying batting averages right now.
I would like to, after the podcast, see if I can set up a bet with you and take the under on .360.
We're in California. We don't bet here, Scott.
Well, I didn't say we had to do it in California. We could drive over to Arizona real quick. The BABIP's absurd. BABIP's .418. He hits nothing hard. I know that he never strikes out, and that's obviously huge for the batting average, but I'd go with .327.
I'm at .344, so.
He's never hit 300 before.
Yes, until this season.
Sure, but I mean, he has hot streaks and he has slumps. When you hit the ball 21% hard hit rate, you're going to have some slumps. The home run, there's no home run. He's got four homers. The speed's kind of gone. He has 17 RBIs. The runs are good because he leads off. I think he's a pretty big fade in the second half. I think he hits under 300 in the second half.
I'm going to, while we go to the next section, I want to check and see what I have him for in VDP, because I know I had him up there among the leaders. So I'm going to check that out. Garrett Crochet, obviously, all the rage. I'm going to, you know, Scott, you hate it when I, you know, kind of pat myself on the back here. But, dude, I have a lot of Crochet. What can I say? I'm very, very happy with Garrett Crochet, just like first and everything. Like, I think Glasnow is the only pitcher that has been, I guess, you know, numbers wise better than him. But where is he going to land, if at all? What's his innings limit? What's the second half Garrett Crochet stitch, maybe?
I see what you did there. You know, do you not like Tarek Skubal? Because Tarek Skubal's been better than Crochet also. I think the biggest thing with Crochet is what happens with the innings. I mean, I think someone wants to trade for him, but I think the trade for him is the fact that he's under team control for three more years. So you're not trading for him just for this year. But this is someone that threw 12 innings last year, didn't pitch at all in 2022, threw 54 major league innings in 2021. He was a reliever, obviously, then. He's at 83 innings right now. Like, how many innings does he go this year? Do you guys have, like, a number? Does he go 125? Does he go 140? Does he get a fake IL stint? Does he get shut down? It's hard to trade for a guy when you don't know if you can use him in the playoffs, because any team that's going to trade for him is a playoff team. Do you kind of shut him down for a little bit and try and ramp it back up? That's always really dangerous. Him and Luis Gil, the two guys that have not pitched many innings, have thrown a lot of rain this year, have been great. I have no idea what their team's doing in the second half. The Yankees have said, we're going forward with Gil and letting him pitch. But I don't know. If you trade for Crochet, it's tough. Are you doing it for the next 3 years or are you doing it for this year? I just don't know how the innings work out.
Maybe the Nationals can trade for him and then shut him down going into a playoff run.
That is amazing. I love that.
And the number that popped into my head, Scott, was 120 innings with what he's pitched. And, you know, you're talking maybe a month and a half left of starts.
Right? Like that, that, how do you trade for that if you're a contender?
You really can't. But you said it's not just for this year. So you can possibly shut him down and, you know, ramp him back up the last month of the season in a reliever role, kind of like the Rays did with David Price back in the day.
I like that. That's a good idea.
And then kind of rip roaring next year. But man, it kind of similar to Mason Miller, other than Crochet starting and Miller's relieving, but an arm that you should sell high if you can. But with what they are going to ask for and what they should ask for, I don't see a trade happening.
They'd be crazy not to trade him, by the way.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And I do think it's going to happen. I think there's been some talk to the Dodgers, the Padres, the Orioles. The VDP projection innings wise for him was obviously it was the high system on him, but it was 141 innings. So I think that's kind of the range where I'm still in. So somewhere in the kind of the mid 140s,
even at that point, he can't finish the year though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. If there's somebody that's going to give up a haul for him, it's going to be AJ Preller on the Padres. That guy does not care about prospects.
Yeah, maybe you trade for him and just let him pitch and see what happens. I mean, I think that we've seen a lot of instances, and you mentioned in the Nationals and Strasburg, we've seen a lot of instances where babying guys and shut him down hasn't worked either. Maybe you just let him pitch if he's healthy and let it go. I mean, it's probably controversial. Most teams wouldn't do it, but you know, if it doesn't work the other way, look at, you know, Max Meyer, look at a lot of prospects. Maybe
Yuri Perez on line one, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. Another Marlins example. I mean, you know, the problem is you're trading him for him and you got him for three more years. But I wonder if either the Yankees or whoever trades for Crochet just lets Healer Crochet go and let's see what happens.
It will probably be a team kind of in the mid, like that's at the bottom of the playoffs race. That's more planning for next year and might use him to try to get in this year. I can't see a team on top trying to do that and giving up the prospects needed to get that arm that's going to have to be shut down. But it'll be fascinating because you don't see arms like that with that much control on the market.
We could go Pittsburgh and get Crochet, Jones, and Skeens back to back to back. You throw Crochet in between them, right, left, right. Pittsburgh's a game out of the wild card. Be a fascinating spot for him.
Henry Davis for Crochet. Let's make it happen.
Vlad says no. Don't. Keep Henry Davis.
Do not let him go to, well, maybe he needs to be freed. Maybe he needs to leave Pittsburgh to truly find himself. By the way, quick thing about, you mentioned Skubal's been better. Yes, from the beginning of the season, Skubal has been better. I did look up some stuff. I just did a random since May 1st, all starting pitchers in the league, 87 qualified. Crochet is first in ERA, in WHIP, in KBB percentage, in strikeout rate, and Sierra. He's been pretty damn good.
He's been flat out. He had those couple hiccups after the first good starts, and since then he has been utterly elite.
Next question for you guys. Dodgers, do they get a shortstop? Please don't say Paul DeJong. Who are they going to get? Are they going to leave Mickey Rojas in there? Could they make a trade for Lindor? Is Bichette on the table? Like, what are they going to get here?
I think they're sticking with Rojas, even with how much money they've spent. And I think there's a limit on how much payroll they're going to take on. So I think they just ride it out and play Rojas there and continue to suck up that bottom of the lineup. Anybody they get will be cheap. I don't think there's going to be any splashes coming. So get ready for a Paul DeJong type guy if they do replace Rojas.
Yeah, I kind of think it's definitely Rojas for now. Maybe you see how Mookie is kind of trending, if it's going to be the 6 weeks, going to be the 8 weeks. The interesting thing would be Bichette, because he doesn't make that much money. I know we're talking in crazy terms here, but he makes about $12 million this year and $17.5 million next year. So he'd be the one guy, if Toronto does decide to sell, that they could do it. They have the prospects to do it, and they only have to pay him for a year and 2 months if they do it at the deadline, because he's a free agent after 2025. That's the one name I think is kind of an obvious name, but I just think the fact that he's not signed long-term kind of helps out. They only have to commit to it for like 1 year and 2 months of him.
Can Miguel Vargas play short, Vlad?
Is there any place Miguel Vargas can't play?
They won't even let him
play. The starting lineup, Scott.
I don't know. Just let the man hit. That's all he needs.
Did you drop him everywhere? Are you holding on? Are you being
stubborn? No, I couldn't hold. Okay. And I didn't even bid on him this week because I didn't really see out. I mean, I was telling you, like, it's like I went down rabbit holes of trying to figure out like what it really is, because it just did not make sense to me. And like, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to joke about like where my headspace was, but like literally fantasy got in the way of reality. I'm like, something's wrong here. And Jason knows, but I was honestly looking to see if like for pictures, I should have asked you cause you're in the business, but like pictures of like, you know, he's got like Dave Roberts has a daughter that I think is like 20 years old. Like maybe Miguel Vargas hit on her, said something to her. Like I was looking for anything I could find to feel like what the real reason is he wasn't playing. But yeah, he's hitting against lefties.
The real reason he's not playing is he's just an absolute butcher in the outfield. If he could left field right now, he'd be playing every day. I just think he's so bad out there. They have to like take him out after the sixth inning because they're worried about what happens after they put Jason Hayward in for him.
I know.
He can hit though.
James Outman coming back anytime soon?
Has to, right? He's been really good in AAA, and they could use a center fielder.
All right. Which of these three top five starting pitchers so far this season most likely to remain in the top five, or at least let's say top 10? You've got Ranger Suarez of the Phillies, still the top pitcher in fantasy in your standard 5x5 leagues. Ratio's off the chain, keeps getting the wins. Strikeouts are lower than the rest, but this balances out the other categories. Tanner Houck, he gave up a couple of earned runs, which is, you know, very, and not that many strikeouts, which is very not Houck-like this year. And then Luis Gil. So between those three, who do you like the best, Jason?
I'm going to go with my heart, not my brain, and say Luis Gil. I think if he can get to 130 innings, he can still finish top 10 with his strikeouts that he's piling up, the wins he's piling up, the ratios. As much as I'd like to believe in Ranger Suarez and Phil Dussault, is magic that dust that he put on him to draft him in every league and have him as the number one starting pitcher in baseball. I think he's going to regress, not to what he was, but he's going to be good, but I don't see him as a top 10. Tanner Houck has been really good. He's another guy that could, you know, stay pretty good throughout the year. His stuff has really played up as a starter.
For me, it's Houck. I love Luis Gil, but you know, the 194 BABIP's not lasting. I'm worried about the innings. I really like Houck, just so many ground balls, and the strikeouts are pretty good. I know his swing and strike rate's down a little bit this year, which worries me a little bit, but you know, 24.5% strikeout rate and a 55% ground ball rate. It's just hard to get in too much trouble when you do that. Like, you're getting ground balls, you're getting punch outs. I know the home runs are a little bit lucky right now, but I think of the three, he's the one that I would project as the best second half guy.
By the way, he's having a Zach Eflin type 2023 season, a 4% walk rate, a 0.95 whip. He's just excellent. For me, it's pretty close between him and Ranger Suarez. I just think wins are so valuable. I think if anyone can get to 20, it'd be him. And I think he just kind of holds up throughout the rest of the year. But I think obviously the strikeouts, kind of balance things out a little bit. So it's really close between those two. And just the magic in Boston there with Andrew Bailey, rotation whisperer. So he's kind of like the Donnie Ecker of pitchers for me now. And speaking of the Rangers staff, I didn't realize that Will Venable, the venerable Will Venable, is on the staff. He's the associate manager to the manager, regional manager, Bruce Bochy.
Great nugget there, Vlad.
Something like that.
I'm trying to figure out how to work that into my fantasy team, but I can't get there.
All right. A few guys here. We're about 73 games into the season for most teams. Some have rained out, whatnot. But looking at like home run stolen base totals for where these guys are at now and where they may end up at the end of the year, let's just kind of do like a quick rapid fire. I'll name the player and their current home run and stolen bases. And I haven't updated this for Tuesday's games, but tell me where they'll end up for the year. So the first is Bobby Witt, 11 home runs, 21 stolen bases. I'm going to go with 24 homers and 40 stolen bases.
I'll go 26 homers and 43 stolen bases.
I like the fact that his hard hit and barrel rate are both up. The home runs are coming this summer. I think he goes 30-38, runs a little bit less, but hits for more power.
I like that. You really looked in that one. Shohei Ohtani, he's at 19. I think he hit a 20th here.
It's still traveling.
I would say it still hasn't landed.
20 homers. Did he steal a base?
I'm not sure.
Okay. 20 homers, 20 homers, 16 stolen bases. Scott, where do you have him for the end of the season?
Going 45-28. The 61% hard hit rate is the most absurd thing in baseball right now. I just don't think they'll need him to run. So he'll steal some bags, but I think he'll slow down the second half. Power is going to be massive. I think with Betts hurt, they're going to kind of be like, just dude, we need you out there. Don't run. 45-28.
Jason. I'm 40-25. I agree with Scott. The power is just absurd. He will start running less. The Dodgers should start running away with that division. And they're going to kind of really settle everything down, get ready for the playoffs. So you're not going to see much in the way of him stealing the last month of the year.
I'm just looking back at my VDP projection on him. I had 42 home runs and 18 stolen bases. So obviously the stolen bases, he's already almost there. I agree with you on the less running a little bit going forward, but I still think he's going to grab some bags. So I'll say 27 stolen bases, 45 home runs, a little bit over my projection. Elly De La Cruz, he's at 12 homer and 37 stolen bases. I had tweeted earlier that the last time anyone has stolen more than 80 was the year Ricky Henderson, Vince Coleman did it together. That was 36 years ago, which is insane. And just to think back that 88 is now to 1988 is almost the same as from now, from 88 until like World War II started, by the way, not to make you feel bad or old or anything.
You know, we're almost as close to 2050 as we are to Y2K. That's pretty.
Any of these stats.
No,
okay, well, let's go back to Elly. How many stolen bases for Elly?
I think he slows down a little bit in the second half. I think you're looking at 65 steals, which is still an absurd amount. He's going to continue to struggle getting on first base, and I think he's going to have about 23 homers.
We're really close. I had exactly 65 written down. I think the home runs are going to come up a little bit. I really like what he's done in June. He's dropped the strikeout rate about 8% from May to June. So I think he's coming around a little bit on offense. We've got to remember he's still 22. I think we're going to see a power surge in the summer in Cincinnati. I'm going 28-65.
Ooh, I got 28-66. Wow. I like it when we align. All right. Julio Rodriguez, 7 home runs, 16 stolen bases. Where do you got Julio?
I have him, he's a second half stud, and I think it's going to continue this year. I think you're looking at, 35 steals, and you're looking at 28 homers.
Yeah, it's interesting with Julio, because his home run to fly balls cut in half from this year to last year, but he's had about only a few less fly balls, so I think it's a little bit fluky. That comes up, and a few too many ground balls, but I agree, I think he's a second half stud. I got 24 home runs, 30 stolen bases.
I'm just looking back at my projections and obviously had him as a top six guy. 36 home runs and 33 stolen bases is what I had for him preseason. I think he's obviously going to be way under there on the home runs, got about 27 of them. And then the stolen bases, I think, will hit. He's already about halfway there, just stays on pace. I think he can get there. So 33 stolen bases. Last guy here, Corbin Carroll. Two home runs, and he may have stolen a base in that 5-0 win against Washington. But anyway, 13, two homers, 13 stolen bases, where you got him.
I honestly, and Scott's not going to like this very much. I think he's injured. I don't know if he's going to really bounce back in the second half. There's something wrong, whether it's a shoulder, which I believe it is. But I don't see, I don't think you're going to get much in the second half. So I'll say eight homers and 24 steals.
I think he realizes the power is not there, and I think he's going to really focus on the stolen bases in the second half. I think he's going to be like, I need to do something. I need to be productive. I'm going to run. I don't see the power coming. He's under a 5% barrel right now. I've got, I got 10 home runs, but I think he gets up to 35 steals, and that is a disaster of a year where he was taken.
Yeah, I think I don't think he's going to make it through the year, to be honest. I hate to be a negative Nelly Cruz, but eight home runs and 24 stolen bases for him. And a total aside, by the way, I just I've been talking over the weekend about Nolan Chanuel, and it's happening. It's slowly happening. Another 3-for-4 night. This is a guy that's hitting 230 right now. You need a little average boost. I think he's a good guy to pick up. They're going to be facing after this week. They're going to have two series with the Oakland A's over the next couple weeks. They're going to be playing in Coors Field with hopefully the wind blowing out. They'll face the Tigers and the Rangers, sort of makeshift rotation there.
So you guys see how that game ended in Anaheim?
Mm-mm. McGill bottom, save
bottom bottom or bottom of the ninth, 6-3 game. With McGill in, two guys on, Taylor Ward hit to center, and Sal Frelick over the fence robbed the game tying home run.
Gonna have to watch the Sports Center highlights. Do those still exist?
They do. It was a bonkers play. I thought Ward had hit it out, so Tobias Harris got the win as a result.
And even Myers might even pick up a win too, huh?
Yeah, the two wins in the same game is beautiful.
Last question here: who is going to be in the World Series? And who is going to win it?
I will go a rematch of this last weekend and go Baltimore Orioles versus Philadelphia Phillies, with the Baltimore Orioles winning the World Series.
Well, that's not very fun, because I had the Orioles also. I think they add a pitcher at the deadline and takes them over the top. I love Grayson Rodriguez in the second half. I love them calling up a couple prospects, really getting it done. I got the Orioles, but over the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers are going to finally get there this year. Give me the Orioles and the Dodgers in a six game series.
Yeah, I think the final four teams will be the Dodgers, Phillies, Orioles, Yankees. I think a lot of people probably have it that way. But this is the first year in 4 years, or 3 years actually, that I actually have the Dodgers in the World Series and have them winning the World Series. So I do have them over the Orioles.
Wow, Vlad cursing your own team is a power move.
Miguel Vargas, walk-off home run, to win it in game seven, biggest moment since the Gibson home
run. How big is the AAA trophy?
Where is the Dodgers AAA team? I don't even know. Albuquerque?
Scott Genstead, so great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on, dude. It's a pleasure. By the way, Jason's idea. I thought it was great. This is fantastic, man. Always love having you on. Always love talking to you. One of my best friends in the world. So thank you for coming on today.
It was a lot of fun. I love both you guys, and it was a lot of fun talking baseball. Some good laughs, some good, hopefully some good stats and input for the listeners, but it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on. It was good to see both you guys.
Thanks, Vlad. Great times. A little fanboy, but two of my idols in the industry getting into it and being able to pod with Scott and Vlad. Couldn't ask for anything more fun for me. So that was a blast. Thanks for jumping on, Scott.
You owe me one golf lesson as a result.
You should quit. Golf is awful.
Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. For Jason Anthony and Scott Genstead, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.